You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where if we're depressed, we'll record a podcast about it. So we don't really have a problem with anything Dak Prescott said. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and the farce keeps growing exponentially. There was so much this week, so much. The NFL is back, and everything that's going on with that, we could have talked about so much about that, hence the reference to Dak Prescott in my little opening quip there. California is on fire, literally. That's not even like I'm being funny anymore. It's literally on fire. We'll get into that a little bit. And then there was, of course, you know, the typical movie conversation. But man, did Netflix step in it this week. We're going to get into all of that. That was crazy, too. But first, let me bring in my co-host. Joining me from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello. Yeah, you know, California is not the only state on fire. I mean, there are other states on fire, Justin. I have this great picture sent to me by one of my coworkers showing the weather of Colorado: fire, freeze, and snow. So it's definitely the apocalypse, all right.
Yeah, I googled California fires and I saw a map where they tried to make it seem like the entire West Coast is on fire.
The entire West Coast? Like,
yeah, they made the fire graphic extra big on all of the different fire spots. So it looks like all of the, just Google here. Let me look at it right now.
Google me right. Google me right.
California. Let's see this. Yeah, California.
Well, while you're Googling that,
it would help if I could type properly.
Yeah,
California fire map. Yeah. If you're listening right now, go to California fire map. For me, the three top stories are New York Times, Fast Company, New York Times. The Fast Company map, literally, it looks like from Washington to Mexico, basically. And I even think parts of Mexico, I think that's Baja, Mexico there, are on fire. Then, as you said, Colorado and north of Colorado. And then basically all the way to Oklahoma's on fire. And the only thing that's not on fire in all of that is Las Vegas, essentially, Nevada. That's what the map looks like. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think we've had a lot of this is kind of the time of year for the fires. There's definitely some smoke in the air. I like to work outside. From my work from home office is my tiny little cement yard. And every morning I've had to wipe down everything full of ash. There's lots of ash in the air. So it's definitely pretty crazy. Like, we'll get into it. But, man, it'd be nice if we could actually, you know, manage our forests out here so that we wouldn't have quite the scale of the problem that we have.
It's almost like the people living in a climate should be able to handle the climate to continue to live there.
Mm.
But we'll get into all of that. So why don't we just hop right into it in the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Before we jump into the news here, just want to remind you that you can support us either on Patreon or Locals, themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. If you do it through Patreon, it's per episode. If you do it through Locals, it's per month, and we always appreciate it. So if you like our content, feel free. Or, you know, don't. You can just keep talking to us. We appreciate that, too. Now, as we tease, we're going to talk about the fires. But before we talk about the fires, we're going to talk about the other thing that starts happening this time of year, Halloween. If you've been in any major store recently, you've seen they've started putting out all the candy and everything. But if California, if Los Angeles County had their way, none of that candy would be sold. Because it was crazy this week, William. I'm interested in your perspective on this one. Because from over here in Florida, LA County came out and they were like, trick-or-treating will not be allowed. Trunk-or-treating will not be allowed. Trunk-or-treating is like apparently you go from car to car getting candy. And then they walked it back. So the headline I have here is LA County walks back Halloween ban, says trick-or-treating, quote-unquote, not recommended. Less than a day after issuing new health guidelines that ban trick-or-treating and other Halloween activities, Los Angeles County public health officials walked back the decision Wednesday. This year, it's just not safe to celebrate in the ways we usually do, Public Health Director Barbara Ferreira said. We're recommending that trick-or-treating not happen this year. So they tried to ban it, and people were like, fuck that, and they had to walk it back and say not recommended. This is absolutely insane. I mean, how far, William, are we going to let this COVID thing go? And did Barbara Ferreira, or however you want to say it, already provide that answer? I never thought I would know, by the way. I never thought I would know the name of Los Angeles County Public Health Director, but I do, because she said another dumb thing this week. Or is it dumb? Where she said that, digital learning will be extended until after the election?
Yeah, after the election.
Did she tip her hand there?
Yep. Until the election, basically. Digital learning will be... I don't get the exact quote, but it was so oddly out of place, oddly specific that she was talking about the election, which aligns with my prediction, right? Like I told you, this all ends after the election.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying that. And this Halloween thing is the same thing. It's literally like the left is trying to punish the country for not electing Hillary Clinton and trying to incentivize them through negative reinforcement to vote for Joe Biden. I mean, am I imagining that?
Maybe you're falling into the two narratives trap with that one. But it's definitely that this is primarily about control, right? And we'll get into that in more detail, right? Because we've got that, we had that story about the levels, right? The different levels. And LA County is going to allow. And I think you might have mentioned it. The lowest level is basically within the margin of error of the false positives of the COVID test. So in other words,
yeah, you said that last week. It was a great point.
Yeah. So there's no way to ever get out of this, right? And we look at historically what these kinds of pandemics how they sort of work, right? And I have a newsflash for those of you in COVID panic. The plague is still with us today. The Black Death is still with us today. You know, these things are still with us today. That they morph and change in different ways. And if we're going to say if the virus exists, we always have to wear masks and always shut all the restaurants and always not have a party. Because, by the way, the restriction about not having non-family members in your house is still in place, which I've broken multiple times. I'm assuming my water and power will be shut off soon. I don't know. Are we just never like this is a trial balloon, Justin, for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
The Halloween thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
What defines non-family member then? Can I not fly
non-household member? Yeah. I think it's more restrictive than that, right? I'll have to pull up the order. But yeah, I mean, you're not allowed to have gatherings at your house. Like, that's already illegal in LA County.
I didn't even think of that. I was planning to go back to spend the holidays with Christine's family, but I might not be allowed, huh?
Yeah, you'll be breaking the law, man. You're a rebel without a cause.
No, I'm definitely a rebel with a cause, and my cause is freedom. So, to say without a cause. But yeah, so that's interesting, the idea of a trial balloon. Interesting of the idea of a trial balloon, because this is absolutely insane to me. The thing that's insane to me is twofold about it. One, where are you usually when you're trick-or-treating? Where are you usually walking?
On the street. Outside.
Right, outside! Outside! Isn't it proven that that there's less transmission outside?
Yeah, and you know what kids often wear?
That's the second thing.
Masks.
Most people wear masks. You wear masks for Halloween. Like, I don't understand. Yeah, I do understand, though. And that's why I don't think it's a two-narrative thing. Like, I really believe that this has a lot to do with the election. I really do. I can't get around it. I mean, I know you do as well, because you just said that you predicted this would be all over after the election. So how do we know we're not falling into the, you know, the right wing narrative here about all of this?
Well, it just gets back to checking our premises and trying to, you know, tease out, like I always do, try to tease out the truth from the narrative, right? And there's, with anything about the virus, it's sort of like, like on my Twitter stream, I have very partisan folks who are, you know, Trump supporters and very, very, very anti virus restriction. And I have to tease through their data in order to find the actual, you know, to take out their sort of rhetorical fluff and their exaggeration to find out what's going on. But they're invaluable in finding out where these control freaks are pushing, right? Where they're pushing to do these things, especially with the LA County thing. It is literally just insane. Like, if you're going to, even the language they use in the order, I remember, I think I posted it to the Discord. It was insane. They were basically outright saying that they were canceling Halloween. And it's like, you can't do that, right? Like, you can provide guidelines, right? But to just outright say, like, we're just not going to do Halloween this year. It just, the language and the paternalism, inherent in there, I think, is the main reason they had to walk it back, which means they'll be much better at it when they try to cancel Thanksgiving.
Right. And I think the point you're making about checking your premises and the point you're making about paternalism is really how we make sure we don't get caught in the right wing narrative. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the place where this is most extreme, it's LA County, California, right? So clearly they're not punishing people for the election. That's just a power grab. So I think what it is it's more a sort of synergy of opportunities, where on one opportunity, people who would be or would be tyrants see this as an opportunity to control people. But then there are other people who see this as an opportunity to try and control the election. And it happens to be that those two groups in this point of time overlap. And that's why it seems like a right-wing narrative. But if we go back to our first principles, right, you were talking about, you know, the right wing saying statistics and you have to sort through all their data and everything. I'm not concerned about the data anymore. The data argument is so flawed, because it's, you know, it's what Gavin Newsom had said from the beginning. Trust the science. It's not about the science. If the science is so far extreme that you have to go to different principles, then that would be obvious. But the science is not that extreme. So we have to go to our principles, and our principles are what you said, William. The disease will always be around. The virus will always be around. Therefore, we have to go back to the principle of not being afraid of life. You can choose one of two options. You can be afraid of life or not afraid of life. And I think I speak for both of us in the mid-side and mid-siders out there when I say we're not afraid of life. I said this back in March or May, you know, sometime in the spring. And that's what fundamentally this is about now. Fundamentally, it's about making people fearful, preying on that fear to gain power, whether it's, you know, LA County just continuing their power grabs, or other people are seeing it as power grabs about the election. I mean, I've seen Joe Biden, I've seen ads for Biden, which say, you know, all of the people who died are Trump's fault because he underplayed it and everything, completely missing, you know, he was going with a more federalist approach and letting the states handle it because things are different in each state.
But yeah, it's funny how federalism is now considered inaction, right?
Right.
And, you know, I before we move on from this story, if we look at, I posted a picture in the Discord of the original order. Unfortunately, it's changed, right? Like, so it's hard to tell, but if you hop into our Discord, midside.com/show, and you'll see the ladies show, you'll see the Discord link.
Midside.com/podcast.
There we go. You'll see that basically they just moved two of the not permitted to a new category called not recommended. So still not permitted is Halloween gathering events or parties with non-household members are not permitted even if they are conducted outdoors. Carnivals, festivals, live entertainment, and haunted house attractions are not allowed. All right. So that those are the ones that are still not permitted. And they just moved the other ones, the door-to-door trick-or-treating and the trunk-or-treating, to not recommended. So, we're living in a bizarro world here in LA County where the order is one thing, right? The non-compliance of the order, at least in Dale's lawn here, is also something that's inspiring to me. There's a, you know how, this is going to sound like some sort of stereotype. I'll just say the mariachi music is playing already this morning, which is pretty common on the weekend. There's two new inflatable play areas for kids in people's front yards. So apparently there's two birthday parties going on this weekend. Maybe I'm an odd neighborhood here in Dale's Lawn. I still do see those two Trump signs in the neighborhood when I'm walking the dog. So maybe at some point the County of Los Angeles Public Health Department will realize that these orders are not being followed and maybe give up and stop giving them. I don't know. What do you think about that, Justin?
I think that is the most helpful thing about the whole thing. The fact that they had to walk it back so quickly, right? It was on a Tuesday. They said Halloween's banned. And then on a Wednesday, they walked it back and said not recommended. And exactly what you just said, I think the most hopeful thing, and there's been a lot of hopeful things throughout everything that's happened, but the most hopeful thing is what you just said, is that people aren't really following the orders. And if they are, if they're following things like masks, they either do it because A, they don't want to fight with the Karens out there. I've had a number of people where I interact with where I'm like, you don't have to wear a mask around me. And they take their mask off. And then we both start talking about how absurd everything is. And then the other reason B is that they just are doing it until it's over. And they think if they do this in the short term, that things will be okay again in the long term. And I think, you know, what you're saying, William, I think is the greatest source of hope in all of this. I agree completely. Except, you know, I'm sorry for you, it has to be in the form of terrible, awful mariachi music. But, you know, I don't think things are so hopeful in California. You want to know why? Because your state's on fire. You want to know why it's on fire? Because somebody held a gender reveal party. Once again, I've got a story here from Deadline, because apparently the entertainment news sites are more reliable than every other. That's probably my favorite thing we're tracking, is the fact that the regular news is dying and entertainment news sites are more reliable. That's probably my favorite motif we're tracking throughout these stories throughout this year. So California wildfire started with pyrotechnics at gender reveal party, fire officials say. California fire officials have sourced the ongoing 7,000-acre, and it's probably more at this point, El Dorado fire burning near Oak Glen in San Bernardino County to a smoke-generating pyrotechnic device at a gender reveal party Saturday morning in, I'm not going to be able to say that, Yucapa's El Dorado Ranch Park. Devices that release pink or blue smoke are sometimes used at gender reveal parties. According to reports, the family that hosted the Yucapa party remained at the scene where they told officials that the fire was an accident. The family could be held financially or criminally responsible, and security footage apparently captured the incident. There is so much in this story, William. There is so much in this story. The first is, if you know you live in a place that's highly combustible and can't contain fire, how irresponsible are you for having a gender reveal party? It doesn't even have to be a gender reveal party. How irresponsible are you for bringing pyrotechnics outside? I mean, it's narcissism on top of narcissism. And what I mean by that is the whole practice of gender reveal parties is narcissistic to begin with. You need to have a fucking party to reveal a gender? It's that, like, it's that important? Oh, we're having a baby. Everyone come over so we can make this grand show of telling everyone what the gender of the baby is. Like, what happened to just, like, keeping it to yourself or just telling your friends who it mattered to? Now you're going to make this grand fucking show of it to the point that you have pyrotechnics? WWE just started using pyrotechnics again. They banned pyrotechnics for years because of how costly it is. And you're using pyrotechnics for a gender reveal party? I mean, this is the most California story I think I've ever heard, William.
Yeah, there's a YouTuber that I follow that has been documenting these gender reveal parties for a while. And the craziness that goes on, for some reason, it's mostly boys that cause the most death and destruction. There was one that involved an airplane supposed to drop, like, something and ended up crashing in a field. There's been multiple fires. There's been people blowing off their hands. One family made a pipe bomb by mistake. They were trying to make something that would, explode, something, and ended up making a pipe bomb. So, yeah, this has been going for a while.
Yeah, and excuse me for being the rational adult here, William, but you rent a plane and drop shit? Am I the only one who hears that and I go, well, couldn't you have saved that money and put it in like a mutual fund and the kid could have it when they... I mean,
that's a college fund right there,
old?
Yeah. Yeah, 18 years, whatever that cost, 18 years of mutual fund interest. I think that's a hunk of change to go to, at least go to community college, you would think.
Or do whatever you want. You get what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand. Like, if you have that much disposable income that you can rent a fucking plane to drop some shit that shows what color what gender the baby is based on a color, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is the Adam Carolla point about California is just full of people either not paying for everything or people have so much money they're paying for everything.
This is a worldwide phenomena. It's just in California, you're going to get wildfires as a result. I forgot what other places the other craziness happened, but it's been all over the place. It's,
if you,
you know,
do a gender reveal party, fuck you.
Hey, I'm all for celebrating things, man. If you wanna have a party for whatever reason, you go for it. But it seems you already got a baby shower, right? And the gender reveal, when does that happen? Does that happen? I don't know these things. I need you breeders to explain this to me. So you have the baby shower. I've been to some of those. I understand what that is. When does a gender reveal party happen? Is that sort of like the male equivalent, right? Because usually the baby shower, it's the the mother and all the hens get together, right? The grandmother,
well,
the aunts,
this?
Stuff like that.
I got a great thing for you. I went into Google and I started typing, when do you know? And it automatically, the first autocomplete is the gender of the baby. So everyone is asking this question. I haven't clicked yet, but
You assign the gender to the baby before the baby tells you what gender it is?
Well, I actually saw somebody say that. Why are they having gender reveal parties when they don't know the baby's gender? And that's something the baby will determine itself. But that's a different thing. I think it's 3 months, but let me click here and see what it is. Since an ultrasound creates an image of your baby, it can also reveal the sex of your baby. Most doctors schedule an ultrasound at around 18 to 21 weeks, but the sex may be determined by ultrasounds as early as 14 weeks. So that's 3 months, right?
Yeah.
Look at that!
Are you saying you're pregnant?
No, I was just remarking at how smart I am.
When is your gender reveal party going to be?
The random shit I know is insane. That's all I'm saying. But there's more to the story, right?
Yeah.
What's the more stuff from your perspective of the?
Oh, I was gonna say, how do we? We have fireworks here all the time in my neighborhood, right? Cole always lets me know because he's not a big fan of them. So how do we get people to stop lighting the forest on fire, Justin? What is it, really just the gender reveal parties that's causing these fires?
No, I mean this is a much deeper issue of California policies, right? This is a result of all the environmentalist policies. I mean, I've said this for years on the show. I don't know if you remember this, William, But this goes back to just desalinate the fucking ocean and you have all the water you need to just dump on the fires. But they won't do that. And the fires are happening to begin with, not because of climate change, as Gavin Newsom says. I believe that, and you're probably more familiar with this than I am, hasn't Alex Epstein been talking about why the fires are happening?
Yeah, he's been going into some detail, but at a very high level, it's just really bad forest management. Controlled burns take resources, and we have power lines that are kind of aging, and there's no incentive to update them and replace them, and in fact, there's a lot of disincentive because you might cause environmental impact, quote unquote, by doing these things. So there's just a lot of inaction and a lot of inability to take action, and that leads to this. I mean, we also have a lot. People don't realize, you know, as dense as LA is, how much land, even around LA County, not necessarily in LA County itself, but around the different counties around LA County, how much of that land is unowned? And by unowned here, I mean either owned by the Bureau of Land Management or some other federal agency or state agency, and it's just completely out of the control of anyone, right? Ostensibly under the control of someone, but it's not, right? Like, it's just not taken care of. And it's when you have that, you have this kind of tragedy of the commons where things aren't taken care of. I mean, I think back to my, like, you know, my parents' modest 36 acres or so that they have back in Michigan. You know, every 10 years or so, my dad has to, you know, have someone come and actually thin the couple acres of forest that we have, right? Not only for something like fire safety if there's a drought, but just for just the overall health of the forest, right? And like, that's just something you do because it's your land, right? And you know, he has to coordinate with the neighbors, make sure things are cool. Sometimes the trucks have to go on their land and stuff like that, right? But this is just something you do. But like, this stuff is really impossible to coordinate centrally, right? Like, think of the insurmountable amount of land that there is that's just owned by the state of California or the federal government. And then you've got the state and the federal government having to work together. Psh, it's never going to happen, right?
Yeah, and that's what it comes back to for me. Exactly what the point you just built towards there. This is a perfect example of people thinking centralized government can fix a situation, but you can't socially engineer reality. And that's what they've tried to do, and they've done it to the point that they've mismanaged everything so poorly. And what's insane to me is their response. I mean, there's a video I saw of Gavin Newsom standing outside, basically near fires, lecturing the rest of the country, where he's like, this is where you all are headed. California is everyone else's future if you do not take climate change seriously.
Yeah, I mentioned during the pre-show, I have two reactions to that statement. The first one is, he doesn't mean climate change. He means our politics, right? This is where you're all headed. This kind of ineptitude is where you're headed if you continue to choose these politics. So I take it that way. The second thing is, this is why you see politicians use climate change so much. The reason is that it is a excuse they can use for their ineptitude. Let's just accept the premise for the sake of argument for a moment that climate change is real, it's catastrophic, it's going to end the world in 10 years, all the things that, what's her name, Greta, whatever her name is, you know, says, predicts, and lectures us about. Let's pretend all that's true. Then who should take care of these public lands? Who should be having a effective fire plan? Who should be, you know, having someone other than inmates be firemen? Who should have more planes on call and in the arsenal to deal with fires? It's Newsom, right? This is a huge deflection. They're able to just say, oh, climate change. That's why this is happening. And it's like, wait a minute. you've been telling us that climate change is real and it's going to cause all these things. And then if it just happens that a thing that normally happens, which is fires happen, they happen in California. That's been documented for thousands of years. This is what happens here. And you're not prepared. Things happen badly. And then you're going to blame the climate change? That doesn't work. It's a dodge. It's totally a dodge.
Right. It's the real reason California's on fire is they've been gaslit so much. That's 100% what it is. It's insane to me because he's sitting there lecturing and you say, well, it's not our fault. It's your fault. And why is it our fault according to him? It's our fault according to him because we didn't give them enough power. Yeah. So they
the
say
ultimate,
we can...
The ultimate victim blaming.
Right. Oh, 100%. That's why it's gaslighting. That's why it's victim blaming. Because it's saying, oh, hey, to solve these problems, give us more power. Oh, you gave us more power and things got worse? Well, it's because you didn't give us enough power. And they're going to keep doing that. And that's why, you know, I like the way you inverted, you flipped on its head his statement. Because I wish he was saying that, you know, if you have these policies, this is what's going to happen. And I hope that's the way the rest of the world sees it. But he doesn't mean it that way. He's literally lecturing.
Yeah, he doesn't mean it that way, but I know people think of it that way, right? People outside of California, you know, comment on Twitter or Discord. Don't you, whenever you hear about this crazy shit going on in California, don't you think not, oh, that's where we're headed inevitably, but you instead think, oh, yeah, of course. They vote these D-bags into office and this kind of ineptitude is inevitable, right? That's what people think. I mean, you see it when, you know, you hear Texans talk about, yeah, move to Texas, but don't vote Democrat when you get here, right? Don't turn us into California.
No, 100%. And, you know, that's why his statement really stuck out to me about this, because it echoes what he said during COVID, where, you know, he said, you know, we're going to do this based on the science and everything's based on the science. It's just bullshit, evil manipulation to try and get himself more power. And I don't know how anyone looks at that video and like, dude, I swear to God, the video played almost like it was fictional. It was like, this is what somebody made, as you're saying, this is what somebody made to make fun of politicians. Just crazy. And speaking of craziness and things being made to almost seem like they're making a point, it's not real. The NFL's opening game was Thursday night of last week. When you were hearing this, it'll be last week. And it was Texans at Chiefs, and they did all their rigmarole before the game. William, how much of their pregame social justice antics did you see?
Almost none of it. I saw a couple of clips on Twitter. I did watch the crowd reaction. I'll put it that way.
Right. So the Texans stayed in for the national anthem. They stayed in the locker room. Then they came out. Then the black national anthem was played. Not that we here in the Midside recognize
it's that WAP song,
national
right?
Anthem.
That's the black national anthem.
Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. I'm just not even going to respond to that. But I will say it's funny, but even I didn't think that. So, wow, William, you've been in the Midside a long time. Then there was a moment of silence and a moment of unity where the players and coaches went out to midfield with Andy Reid wearing his face shield. It's fucking hilarious. And they all linked hands during a moment of unity, quote unquote. And I have an article here. You can see it on the midside.com/podcast. NFL fans, reporters expressed disgust with Chiefs booing during unity moment. So here's a quote from the article. The most polarizing moment, and they're referring to all the pregame stuff, was about Chiefs fans, specifically those at Arrowhead Stadium, who could be heard booing during the moment of unity. And of course, they do the typical thing now of they link to some tweets. So I want to read some of these tweets here. Kansas City Chiefs fans appear to boo the moment of unity with the Texans prior to the game starting. People hate politics ruining sports. I have a feeling that the stadiums in the areas that allow fans will be stadiums filled with people most apt to boo a moment of unity. So that's from some guy from NBC Sports. William, I appreciate the fact that he is able to link the COVID narrative to the sports, the social justice narrative. That's a very succinct
yeah.
worldview right there.
Yeah.
Don't kneel. Don't lock arms. Don't love each other. Don't empathize with your brother. Don't care about your country. Don't speak up for the vulnerable. Don't seek justice or righteousness. Just play. Sad. That's Ben Watson, the former tight end, I believe, who played for the Patriots. Yeah, that's Ben Watson. And that's just somebody who you can tell he's well-meaning and he's just bought into the narrative. Nobody's saying don't empathize with your brothers. Nobody's saying don't care about your country.
Yeah. You see, it's the two. That one's perfect because it's the two narratives, false dichotomy, bro. Right?
Yeah.
It's 100%. Like, I don't think I doubt that there's someone in this way in the audience, but if you're one of those people who are super worried about the virus and, what we've been talking about as irrationally worried, not someone with, compromised.
We've lost
those kind of listeners, right? I know they're gone. but if you happen to be listening, I don't impugn your motive, right? I don't. You want to live, right? There's nothing wrong with that, right? What I'm making fun of is the irrationality, right?
Yes.
And that is not an attack, right? That's my attempt, my humorous attempt at getting you to focus back on reality, right?
Right.
I wouldn't call you
that's a great point.
Disunity or attach all these other characteristics to you, right? That's unfair. Right.
And that's exactly the perfect point because it leads into the one tweet I'd like to reply to. I would love this. This is from someone named Sarah Spain. She has a blue check mark, so I guess she's important. I don't know. I would love to see an interview with someone, anyone in the crowd who chose to boo a moment of silence and unity. Just try not to sound like a complete and utter idiot putting into words why you're angry about unity. Morons, all of them. So Sarah Spain, you're assuming they're mad about unity, but why don't you look at it from a different perspective? And there's two things I would tell you, Sarah Spain, and this is extremely relevant to what William just said. Here are the two things I'm going to tell you. One, did you consider for a second that for all of my life, and for, a lot of those people, for most of their lives, they've been told that racism is X and unity is Y. And we have all these definitions. And now all of a sudden in the past 10 years, they've tried to change the definition. And especially since George Floyd, they tried to change the definition. And by changing the definition, they've went backwards and told all those people that they're racist and bad people their entire lives without them knowing it. So they've genuinely, and let's even assume altruism. They've tried to be altruistic. They've tried to live their lives to care about other people. And now you're telling them it's not good enough. And then they pay all this money to go to this game and they have to sit there and watch those people do that and basically tell them that's not good enough because we've changed the rules on you. So you've been living life by one set of rules and then you change it. And now you say you're against unity. How many of those people in the crowd have thought their whole life they were for unity, and now all of a sudden they're being told they're against unity? Maybe that's why they're booing. And maybe the other reason they're booing is you're going to sit there and tell them there's racial injustice, and two of the highest paid players in the league are standing there locked arms, and they're both black. Now, I'm not saying that means there's racial justice in the country and that everybody's treated equally and there's not racism. I'm not saying that, but maybe things aren't as bad as you think if two of the highest paid athletes in the most profitable sport in the country are black. And then they're going to sit there, those two, and say, well, it's not good enough that you pay us all this money and you come here and you support us and you don't give a shit about our race. It's every other black person you have to care about, too. And not only do you have to care about them, you have to care about them in the way we tell you.
And irregardless of who they are, what their character is, right? Regardless of what their character is.
Right. And that's, that's why people get mad. We've talked about that with the guy who got shot recently in Washington or in Wisconsin, right? We talked about that.
Right.
It doesn't matter who their character is. And maybe that's why people are mad. You've changed the rules on them and you're telling them it doesn't matter what they do. It's not good enough. They can never live up to it. And that's why people want to keep politics out of sports, because you want to politicize sports, because you know that that's the last bastion to get your views through. Because sports are ultimately about meritocracy. And if you can make those no longer about meritocracy, we have no meritocracy left in this country. And maybe that's why they're booing.
Yeah.
Just the amount of gaslighting, William. It's just, it's all gaslighting, isn't it?
Maybe. I think so. I think it's a self-reinforcing narrative. It gets back to that cult methodology, right? That's what it is. And
right, it's because
every action done by the other side is rationalized to be evil, right? And
right,
bad
and that's
intent.
Why, so the,
and I don't want to do the same thing. That's why I'm pumping the brakes for you here. It is all gaslighting in effect, but I don't think they're necessarily doing it on purpose. They're caught in this. It's like a computer program that's caught in a loop, right? They don't realize they're in an endless loop.
I also see a difference between Sarah Spain and Ben Watson. Right. Like Ben Watson is trying to focus on values. Right. He's like, you know, he's saying empathize, care about your country, vulnerable, justice, righteousness. Right. So he's not saying, you know, all these people are fucking morons. Right. He's just saying these are the values it should be about. You can at least have a conversation with Ben Watson. You can say, well, that's what you're saying, but have you considered these are the definitions? Whereas Sarah Spain is just like, you must be against unity, so fuck you, you're a moron, every single one of you. And that's what you're talking about, where it's self-reinforcing because, and this is why social justice is it's double evil, right? First of all, it's evil because it treats people collectivistically. But second of all, it's evil because the people who believe in it believe they have the moral high ground to the point that they can just dismiss anyone else.
Hmm.
And it leads to insane things, right? And I know this is something that you care about because it's, you know, your home state. Holy shit. The University of Michigan Dearborn apologizes for segregated virtual cafes. So they tried to have this event where online they were going to have discussions about race. But inside these virtual events, there was a one for BIPOC, right? Was that the term they used?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And then there was a one for white people. And then people were like, wait a second. Isn't that segregation? So here's a couple quotes from the article. UM Dearborn sincerely regrets the terms used to describe the cafe events on September 8th. By the way, did they say they regret the cafes or do they regret the terms used to describe the cafes?
Only the terms, not the cafes. Yeah. And we'll get into that.
The terms used to describe these virtual events and the descriptions themselves were not clear and not reflective of the university's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. By the way, UM Dearborn, it's not the terms that are the issue. The virtual spaces were designed to let students talk about current events and share their experiences related to race, as well as to discuss potential solutions, university officials said. The aim was to provide students from marginalized communities a chance to exist freely without having to normalize their lives, while providing non-POC students an opportunity to educate themselves without relying on students of color, the university said. William, isn't this separate but equal?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a, you might be thinking like, let's put this in context. I'll get back to Title IX in a second. Let's put this in context. U of M Dearborn is a small satellite campus of the University of Michigan. Okay. So I'm sure this is going on other places in the university, right? So let's think of Title IX. We do have separate but equal, in women's sports, right? We say, hey, we want, you know, the same amount of sports that women can participate in. But we don't let, you know, men and women, you know, but be on the same sports team for the most part, right? We recognize that, the criteria for a lot of women's sports needs to be different. So you can understand then why, they would apply that same logic, right? To this, right? They'd say, well, we can't discriminate or we can't be discriminatory. We can't violate Title IX. If we're going to have a space where we restrict, which it's unclear whether they were actually going to restrict it, right? Like if you notice, they were very weaselly about about who could participate in this. This room is a safe space for this kind of criteria, right? And then this one is for this kind of criteria. So they weren't necessarily restricting them, but it was heavily implied that they were restricting them. And so, yeah, they set up two separate areas. So that's kind of what the how you get to this point, right? But the funny thing is I'm uncomfortable in general with these kinds of safe spaces, right? To normalize behavior, right? And to me, I always want to ask the question, normalize what behavior? And that's really important to me. I remember that early on, some of the successful ways in which, for folks who were gay to, become more accepted and integrated were things like gay straight alliances in high schools and colleges, right? And now you can see that tone is different now, right? Now you have this subservient, almost, slave master relationship between the oppressed and the oppressors in the opposite direction, right? Right? You've got that the oppressed are going to go over here and we're going to talk about you, the oppressor, and you guys, the oppressors, go into your room and flagellate yourselves because we're not going to explain to you why you're the oppressor and how evil you are because that is too tiring for us. It triggers us. So you're going to explain to each other how you've oppressed us. And then, I guess we'll be separate forever. But that's the idea here, right? Instead of building bridges, finding common values and sharing those common values and celebrating the difference, now we're just othering the oppressor, right? And feeling righteous about it.
Well, you're othering everyone, really. I mean, the thing that fundamentally bothers me about it, with what you said, it's associated with what you said, which is very well taken, is the fact that it's racist in itself, right? Because the example you used of gender is, there are gender differences, and we recognize that for, women to have their own sports, they have to be separate but equal, because if they play with men, it won't be fair to them. Right, we recognize that. Now, a lot of that is sort of
under fire.
And it
will be dangerous for them. We always leave that part out. Dangerous.
Right, and that's why I use the general term unfair. And some of that's under fire with the whole trans movement, but that's a different discussion. But it's the same thing here, right? If race is a non-essential characteristic, if there's nothing that carries with it, then you should be able to have discussions with each other, and you should be able to have discussions about what it is that we have in common about humanity and what are healthy and unhealthy, or as we like to say them, rational or irrational characteristics, habits, traits, and then everyone can move towards that and you can learn from each other. Instead, what they do is they take non-essential characteristics to being human, make them essential to a race, and say if a member of the race doesn't accept it him or herself, that person has internalized racism. And if a person not of that race doesn't accept it, that person is racist. And what that does is it package deals what race is.
I think to get back to the excusing bad behavior thing for a second. The other premise that's buried in what you said and what they're saying by saying they need these separate rooms is that there must be a class of behaviors that are allowed, or sorry, that they want to encourage that cannot be done with white people present, right? Or the other way around, right? There must be a class of behaviors that they're trying to discourage in white people that can only be done separately, right? And then you have to dig one level deeper and you say, well, wait a minute. What are these behaviors and ideas that are inherent to race? And now you see that we're at the contradiction, right? Because there are no behaviors or ideas that are inherent to race. And so that's the racist premise behind all of this that we keep getting stuck on, right? Because for us, this is so obvious that this is racist. Like, this is, so let's make a concrete that illustrates the difference. So having a gay bar is not discriminating against heterosexual people, right? They can still come into the bar. In fact, they do, right? And they and it's still a good time, right? It's a theme,
I've
right?
I've been to a gay bar before.
Yeah, it's a great place to hang out. You'll get a lot of drinks, Justin.
There are a lot of women at gay bars.
And so it's that's great, right? That's a sort of a, not to use their term, but that's an inclusive space for the most part, right? But it would be different if I, and I've joked about this before, if joining the gay group requires some sort of litmus test about being gay, what exactly are they going to measure, right?
Well,
there's a few things they could measure, right? Am I going to have to, blow a dude before they let me into the group, right? Or is there some, it gets back to, well, in their mind, there would be a political litmus test, right? I should be, against guns. I should be for socialism. I should be, a Bernie voter. I should be whatever those things are, right? Like, I should be, for transgender things. I should be, TERF, right? Like all these things, all this package dealing is required to test my membership of the group.
There's package dealing to test your membership in the group of gay men?
Yeah.
No response? Okay. No, and that's exactly the point, is you used an or in that at one point. You said it's either they want to discourage behaviors in the other group, or they want to participate in behavior in their own group. And it's and. It's and. Ultimately, William, and it's the same thing in your gay example, right? Ultimately, it's racist against everyone. And ultimately, it's intolerant to the sexuality of everyone. Because then you get bullshit like, oh, if there's a straight person who's really into show tunes, they must actually be gay. Straight people can't be into show tunes. Right? Or you get dumb gender shit like, oh, men own dogs and women own cats. Right? This is how we get to these stupid...
Men can't sew or crochet, forgetting that tailors exist and have been a huge thing for like...
It's a whole fucking job,
thousands of years, yeah.
Yeah. No, 100%. And that's ultimately why the race thing is so insidious, because it's undoing all the progress that's been made. And it's racist against everyone. And that's where the two narrative things come in, right? Where people are like, well, this is racist against white people. And then other people are like, no, this is racist against black people. You're racist against black people. No, you're racist against white people. No, motherfuckers, you're all racist against everyone. And that's the fucking problem.
Yeah. Before we move on from the story, though, one more example that I have to call out here. I've seen this many times, and this is something I have a hard time controlling myself when I see. And I'm very sensitively tuned to this. When I see that there's behaviors that are acceptable just in general society, at the workplace, that sort of stuff. When I see people use their identity as an excuse to violate those behaviors, that bothers me, and I speak out about it. And then immediately, the reply to that in this protected cult is that, you know, you'll pull out your white-splaining or your tone-shaming, right? Those are the replies. And to me, that is the end of any rational discussion, right? If you can't call out logical fallacies or rude behavior without someone replying, well, that's just your, you know, straight white, patriarchal Western value of communication and rational thought, and that's racist or homophobic or whatever, then there's no, that's the epistemological equivalent of anything goes, right? I have built this castle in the sky, and, you know, any attempt to point out that it's floating and not connected to anything is itself proof of its trueness, right? It's the end of any rational thought. And if you're going to allow yourself to behave any way you want in that case, then that there, you're on the road to Antifa, baby, right? There's no stopping.
Yes. Very well said. And to just drive home one point very quickly, to belabor a point. I am not claiming, and I don't believe William is either, and William, correct me if I'm wrong, that someone's heritage or racial background can't be a part of that person's identity and can't be a part of that individual person, and you can't learn general truths based upon current cultural context. But what we're saying is you need to distinguish between that being cultural trends and that being essential, meaning every person of that race or gender or whatever will necessarily have those. And that's where the oppression comes in, and that's where the racism comes in, because that's the collectivism of it. It's because of X, because you are X, you necessarily are Y. Am I wrong, William?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think we talked about it, last year on the show. It's one thing to, if you happen to know nothing about me other than that I'm gay, that you assume certain things. But the moment you meet me and you talk to me, if you're operating that these are assumptions, that's great. But if you say those are requirements, that's when it's bad, right? And it goes for any characteristic, right? Assuming that I'm privileged because I'm white, that's the same problem, right? Assuming even positive traits, right? Gay folk tend to make more money than straight folk in the same age bracket. So assuming I'm rich is probably a bad idea, right? Looking at me because I'm male and saying that I like certain things. You can assume, right? You could operate under the assumption, all things being equal. But again, as soon as you meet the individual, you have to throw all that out the window and explore what it is, what makes up that individual, right? Their identity is not a set of characteristics like a label printer printed a label for them and just like stuck it like the ingredients on the back of their head, right? That's not how it works.
And you wouldn't want it to work. Whatever happened to teaching children about everyone's different and that's what makes the world wonderful? Remember when we learned that on kids' shows?
Oh, man. Are you talking about Wild Wild Wubsy?
Yeah, that kind of stuff, right? But wow, kids' shows have changed, huh? And there was a controversy about something like that this week. And that's we got one more news story. We're going to get into that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Focused on. William already plugged Discord, so I'm not really going to do a lot of that. If you want to join us during the week and keep talking to us during the week, you can do it in our chat program. We use Discord for our chat program. You can go to midside.com/podcast or just the midside.com, and on any episode there's a link. You can join our Discord. Look forward to talking to you. If you were around anywhere on social media this week, you saw that Netflix really stepped in it with a new movie they released. It's a French movie. And it supposedly is about one thing, but people are complaining it's about another thing. And I, William, you know, you already talked about checking your premises on this episode. I want to do that because I fall on one side of it and I want to make sure I'm not being reactionary, especially because I seem to agree with the Twitter mob this time. And that's always a disconcerting thought because usually the Twitter mob is wrong. So essentially, Netflix released a French movie called Cuties. People are claiming this movie is about pedophilia, or this movie contains pedophilia, not that it's about pedophilia. It contains pedophilia because it shows 11-year-old girls in compromising situations. The plot of it being, you know, an 11-year-old girl is trying to deal with her sexuality, deal with, you know, the sexual images she receives that teach her how to grow up as a woman. And there's an article on USA Today. It says, Cuties controversy. Does Netflix's new movie deserve the backlash? I'm going to read some quotes from it. I'll read some quotes and then I'll throw it to William for your opinion. Cancel Netflix and boycott Netflix were trending on social media Thursday, a day after the film debuted on the streaming service. the Parents Television Council stood behind its earlier objections after seeing the film, with program director Melissa Henson saying the film normalizes the sexualization of little girls and desensitizes millions of viewers at home by asking them to be entertained by it. So what is the film ultimately about? Cuties is a look at one girl's struggle to find her identity amid contrasting cultures. Amy, 11, moves to a housing project in Paris and is raised by a conservative mother who is quietly suffering. Amy is simultaneously exposed to the internet's sexy dance videos and internet selfies and cool girls who appear carefree, confident, and free. Wow, that's terrible writing. Carefree or confident and free. It's excruciating to watch Amy and the other children gyrate and pose as part of the dance group they call Cuties. It's truly upsetting to see her wear skimpy clothes and bite her lip while staring into a phone lens. The whole movie, which includes a scene where the young actresses don the spandex outfit seen in the maligned promo image, is very hard to get through, especially by its third act. But that's part of the point. The movie confronts the horrid reality of how accessible imagery and videos can negatively impact children. So what do you think, William? Do you buy this argument, or is this pedophilia?
So I think it's a bit of a false dichotomy, bro, there. But
I knew you were gonna say that.
Here's what I think. I think we've got these two narratives. So I've watched some of the criticism of this, and mostly it's around, hey, if you're gonna make a film about, you know, exploiting children and over sexualizing children, like it's a hard topic and cool. Like that's great. The problem is when you're coming out against exploiting children by exploiting children. These are 11-year-old actresses doing these things, which is a huge deal for people, right? And if this is just the way this is shot and the selection of the actresses and the scenes and everything else, you're doing exactly what you're coming out against. And that is, it would be like lighting a fire to come out against arson, right? And I think that's where the criticism is valid. So we think about like there's been a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bad themes in films from the 70s, right? And we sort of look back at those now and say, like, this is crazy. I think this is one of those things that seems really crazy to me. It is, even if it's true that the artist's intent was to, you know, be like an argument against, child exploitation and sexualization, the result is not that. The result is exactly what, feeding into this, normalization of sexualizing children. And now the premise we have to check, like we always have to, and this will get uncomfortable, is, you know, we've extended childhood well into people's 30s, right? You know, but at the same time, we're like, we've struggled as a society of defining where this sexuality line is, right? And this is going to get back to California allowing a 10-year difference between same-sex folks. They just passed that law a couple weeks ago. So this is a difficult line that we can draw, but I think purposely using these young children and having them do these very sexualized dances and the way it's shot, zooming in on them like they are Rihanna or, you know, Katy Perry or whoever else, right? If the purpose was to make people uncomfortable, I guess you've succeeded. But at the same time, you've done exactly what what people we call out as pedophiles do, right? Someone was pointing out, like, this is the kinds of images that if they found on your hard drive, the FBI would arrest you on suspected pedophilia, right? This would be enough to get a warrant for searching all of your computers for child porn, right? Just having this movie would be. So what do you think, Justin?
I agree with much of what you said, but I don't think the right premise to check is the whole age thing, like you're saying. I think the right premise to check is a couple regarding art. And the two, I think, are, as always, naturalism versus romanticism. And as not always, but something that's an undercurrent, is that there are objective criteria we can judge film by. I think the issue here is terrible filmmaking, because I understand both points. And what I mean by that is, I agree that the way this is shot is akin to pedophilia because of what you just said. The imagery, if on your desktop, if on your computer, would cause you to be investigated. And it is objectively sexualizing young girls. I've even read there's a moment where a girl, an 11-year-old girl, takes off her top. I will not watch this movie to confirm or deny that, but I read that. It was listed on IMDb at one point. No longer on IMDb. But I also understand the point of view of the artist says that her intent is to demonstrate this. And that is a valid concern. I think with everything that's going on, William, you agree. You can disagree if you want, but tell me, do you agree that the over-sexualization of young children, especially girls, is an issue in our culture?
Yes. I think two things are true. One, the over-sexualization is true, and that is partly due to two, which is we stigmatize folks' sexuality, right? Just
well,
in general,
that's true,
right?
As well.
Like
yeah,
I that's a reaction to that, right?
Right,
so
I agree.
You know, like you know, junior high and high school kids exploring is highly stigmatized. Right.
Yeah. And I think she was, I think the director's intent was to go for this, knowing French culture, knowing what the critics are saying about this. I agree that I think the director was going for this, but I'm going to use an example you used, take that and then pivot into something that it's important we address for this. You use the example of fire, right? You don't light a fire to prove you're against arson. Well, let's use an example that makes me think of. Fahrenheit 451. What did Fahrenheit 451 do, right? Is Fahrenheit 451 pro-book burning?
No, not at all.
No, but it wrote a book, right? Ray Bradbury wrote a book about book burning. But how do you know he's against book burning? Is he a naturalist?
No.
No, he's a romanticist, is he not? Every word in that book is symbolic. He has chosen every word in that book very intentionally. If you ever want to look at great science fiction and know how to write it and understand how to read it, read Fahrenheit 451. Because the way he frames it, right? And you were talking about the shots and everything, William, in this movie, and you were saying that they shot it like a Rihanna video. The director isn't talented enough, or if she is, she gravely miscalculated how to film this movie. To shoot these girls in a naturalistic way to make that point doesn't make the point, because the frame, the visuals in itself, don't comment on what she thinks it's commenting on. Maybe the rest of the movie does, but it has to be an integrated whole, and the visuals have to comment on it. In the same way where it's very obvious, and the reason I went to fiction first, is we don't understand this as much. Written fiction first, is we don't understand this as much in movies. It's a lot harder to see that the visuals must comment as well. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And the example I'm going to use is, the one we can pivot into, is the middle ground between Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, and Cuties. And that middle ground is Sucker Punch. And it must be addressed. Because isn't Zack Snyder claiming to do the same thing in Sucker Punch? He's commenting on the sexism in the industry and among a lot of these, you know, fedora, hat-tipping incels that are among these fandoms. Isn't he claiming to do that in Sucker Punch?
Yeah, yeah. And so he's doing it in a quite a visually stylized way, right?
Right,
the sexuality
exactly. So that's the first thing.
Is definitely there, right? That. But it's stylized in a way that, like you said, integrates with the theme. It's not naturalistically shot.
So that's the first thing. Because it's stylized, you know from a moment that from the first moment, you know that this isn't reality. So you immediately have that where you go, okay, this isn't reality. But you see the clip of them dancing for Cuties. It looks real. It looks like that could have just been a performance that happened to exist. It was very well choreographed and very well costumed, right? That could have been real. There was nothing in there to indicate, besides the fact that we knew it's fiction, that that was fiction, right? Because it's shot naturalistically. So that's the first thing with Sucker Punch. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, within that stylization, the way the sexuality is handled in the scenes where they're most sexual, they're the scenes where the sexuality is the least appealing. And what I mean by that is, it's the fantasy levels, right? The first level, the first fantasy of the asylum, where there's sexualization in that, especially at the end where Blue is trying to get with Baby Doll after she's been lobotomized. How disgusting, William, is that level?
Yeah, it's super disgusting, right?
Like, right.
And I think that contrasts nicely from the preview clips that we see of Cuties, right? They again, getting back to it, it's being shot like a Rihanna video. It's not doing it in an ironic or stylized way, right? It's right. Just this is, oh cool, this is just the way it is, right?
Right. So then Sucker Punch takes that asylum, which is the equivalent of, you know, oh, we're going to comment on reality. Imagine if they had done the dance scenes in the equivalent of the style of the asylum, right? That would speak volumes, would it not? Then Sucker Punch takes that and it jumps forward to a brothel, which then immediately makes you say, wait, what is it we find appealing about brothels? And it makes you think that even though brothels have this like glamorous appeal, they're not glamorous at all. I mean, I personally, I've been to a strip club once in my life and I'll never go back. I don't enjoy it. The idea of a woman who has nothing to do with me and doesn't care about me at all getting naked for my money does not appeal to me. This is the same thing as OnlyFans.
The smell of baby powder and desperation. That's all that a strip club has to offer.
Right. And the same thing with OnlyFans, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to pay money to this random girl online to see
who's
going
to pretend to be interested in me. Yeah.
Well, he isn't even going to do that. Just like, oh, pretend that, oh, I get to show you pictures that I would normally show to somebody I'm interested in, right? It's the same concept. So it makes us understand that, especially because the brothel scene, when it's about to get to the most sexualized part, right? When Baby Doll is about to start dancing, aka stripping, what does the movie cut to? William.
I don't remember.
The action scenes, remember?
Oh, okay.
The action scenes. And so when are the girls the most sexualized? Or sorry, not the most sexualized. When are the girls the most attractive? They're most attractive in the action sequences. When yeah. They're strong and they're kicking butt and they're fighting back. That's intentional. The sexualization, right? The dance is the action scene. So Snyder is intentionally stylistically commenting and saying, this is what actually makes a woman attractive. Do you see how he's doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that culminates in the scene with the high roller, the fantasy scene of the high roller, showing what a woman would actually find attractive and what an actually, you know, attractive man, an actually self-confident man would act like. And that's the difference, is how to stylize something and how to comment on it. You have the construction of your movie, the construction of your visual frames reflect your commentary. You don't just say, I'm making commentary, and then you shoot as is. And that's the problem with Cuties, is I believe this director accidentally made pedophilia.
Hmm.
That's what I think happened. Now, do I think Netflix should take it down? That's a tough question. Yes, I believe Netflix should take it down because I draw a line at pedophilia. But should Netflix always take down a movie just because the director doesn't do what he or she intended to do? No. But in this specific case, because the protection of children is so important, I believe it should be taken down. What do you think?
I, you know, it, It's hard to say. I think that I would understand taking it down. I wouldn't have put it up.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying I would have put it up, but I'm saying now that we're in this condition of reality where it does exist and is up, what should be done?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. I think that the way they are doubling down and they promoted it and everything else just it's sickening, right? And it's, yes, that's the part that bothers me most. Not that they have it in their library, right? Like, this is a film. It won an award. It exists, like you said. That I have no problems with. But the fact that it's rubbing it in everyone's faces, you know, it was on the home screen. The preview auto-plays when you play it, right? Or when you hover over it. This is all just gross, right? And it's really hard to say, you know, just like take it down, right? Like you said, this is not a Fahrenheit 451, right? We're not saying burn it. I don't think the director intended this to be child pornography, but it is, right? This is objectively what you would be, like I said before, this would be enough probable cause to get a warrant to search your computers, right? This is exactly right. what they would do.
Right. So, and that's why I'm saying it needs to be taken down. And that's why I'm saying the ultimate issue is what you just said implicitly when you said that it won awards and critics love it. The problem is we have a culture that loves naturalism to the point that anything is excused as long as it's that protected style of art, where people love watching depravity. This has been my problem with naturalism for a long time. Oh, well, why did you shoot it like that? Well, that's exactly the way it is. I'm just capturing life as it is. But people will watch depravity like that. It's the same thing. Like, you know, it's adults, but, you know, why do people want to watch adults do drugs? Like, I've never understood things like that. Like, that does not appeal to me.
You must be now, watching too much Twitch.
I'm watching too much Twitch?
Man, if you turn on Twitch and watch Just Chatting, you'll see people having parties and doing drugs.
Yeah, well, William, you should take what you just said and turn it into a movie. Take that concept, sort of like that movie Searching, starring the guy who played Sulu in the new Star Trek. His name escapes me at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
John Cho. That style movie, because you would do well. You would make a lot of money, or at least be successful with the critics, because that's what they love, and that's the problem. We have this culture where we can't distinguish between good art and bad art, and all you have to do to make good art, quote-unquote, is have it be naturalistic. Think of how crazy people are that they were able to look at Cuties and actually call it a good movie. That's the most sick and depraved part, that we've gotten ourselves to this point. That's why I fought to release the Snyder Cut, to fight against stuff like this. So we'll see what happens from here on out, but I don't think Netflix has a particular agenda. And because we saw, you know, they have a Zack Snyder movie coming. I think Netflix is just trying to get as much content as possible. And that's what happens when you have the policy of getting as much content as possible. It's bound to end up at something like this as well, right?
Yep.
All right. This concludes our journey. Well, what did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that we are all looking forward to the next Cannes Film Festival winner, which is literally just child pornography cut together. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I'm not even going to say anything after what you just said. I don't want to take away from the impact of that. So this, do we want to plug a little bit? Let's plug a little bit. As always, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. It wouldn't be this show without you. Love having you on here. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of saying things, I would love having you listen to this. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of saying things, I'm like, man, I really hope people hear that. That was a great point. And I feel that way about the Sucker Punch Cuties comparison today. So thanks for listening to that. It means a lot to me. Liberty.me, always love having you. Love having you listen. I think, you know, libertarians are really important in today's society. I basically consider myself one. I don't really like to get in the debate between objectivist and libertarian, although I will say there's no such thing as a left libertarian. Fuck you if you're dumb enough to think there is. If you want to buy a t-shirt, midside.com/store. Patreon or locals, you can always support us. themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/locals. That is how we keep the lights on. I actually just renewed hosting for the site. So thanks, Midsiders. Thanks, supporters. Appreciate that. And as always, the number one thing you can do for us is tell a friend. So get out there and tell some friends about the show. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a romantic day. Now I gotta go back and watch Sucker Punch again.
Good.
What a terrible burden that I have.